The more researchers you have, the better results you're likely to get. That's why Netflix offered a $1 million prize to whomever can figure out how to improve by 10% the software that makes movie recommendations to Netflix customers. You'd think it would be a simple matter of compiling their past preferences, but that only gets you so far. As Clive Thompson explains in this weekend's New York Times Magazine, there's an impenetrable mystery at the heart of our predilections. But it's a mystery that the Netflix program called Cinematch has to penetrate if it wants to succeed.
Almost two-thirds of all movies they rent are picked because people had it recommended by the computer. Now, that seems like almost kind of crazy when you think about it, but it makes sense because, like, when I joined Netflix, I had, like, 20 movies I wanted to see. So I saw those. And once I'm done, I can't really think of any other movies I want to see. So if they want to keep on charging me $17 a month, they have to be active in helping me find new stuff, or I'll go 4 or 5 months without renting any movies, and they'll be like, why am I spending $17 a month, right? Their business model is incumbent upon keeping you renting movies.
So how's this contest going? What can their data tell them at this point?
Well, it's interesting. Within about 1 month of the competition, all these amateurs, and they're mostly amateurs, had gotten 5% better. So they, like, right off the bat, they're 5% better. And they did this with just a couple simple mathematical techniques. One of them is called singular value decomposition. It's very common. Like, mathematicians use this all the time to take huge sets of data and try and find interesting patterns in it, but no one had ever thought to use it for movies. It's a way of sort of automatically trying to find what they call features in a data set. Now, what that translates to in movies is it'll look at the movies and automatically try and pull out features.
And for an example, one would be comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
And another feature might be they all have Tom Hanks.
Yeah. And you can sometimes, when you look at this feature set, you can figure it out. So you'll see a list, and it's like all these chick flicks at one end, and then all these action films at the other. So you're like, well, clearly it's discovered something that sort of arrays these movies based on, you know, chick flickiness. That way it can sort of recommend it based on doing the same thing for the user. It sort of figures out how chick flicky are you as a user. Well, here's the movies that are chick flicky, and it lines you up that way. But as they got better and better at doing this, when you look at some of these features, you can't figure out what, for goodness sake, the computer is figuring out, because there's just like a bunch of movies at one end and a bunch of movies at the other end, and it doesn't make any sense at all. I look at this one feature set. It had like a wrestling video and a chick flick and a historical drama, and all clumped together as if there was something similar with these. So it's like the computer is finding something out about us that we ourselves can't even figure out.
Which I think is a good time to bring up Napoleon Dynamite. Why is that film significant?
Well, Napoleon Dynamite is really interesting because what happened is these guys, they came out of the gate and they were very quickly able to get like 5% better than Netflix. But it took like another 6 months to get to 6%. It took like a year to get to 7%. They've been 2 years in now. And they have been slowing down. So, like, they've just been stuck at about 9.5% for, like, 6 months. They're just inching up. It's almost like you're climbing a mountain that's getting steeper and steeper as you go. And so I asked them, I said, why? And they said, well, basically the problem is there's this small handful of movies that are causing most of our errors. You know, so, like, basically they're movies that we can't seem to predict whether or not you're going to like it. And it turns out that there's one movie that is generating 15% of the errors. So if you could figure out whether or not someone likes this movie accurately, you would be 15% of the rest of the way to making $1 million. And that movie is Napoleon Dynamite. They cannot seem to predict whether or not you're going to like it.
Because it's so weird?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I asked them. I said, so why? Why this? And I should point out that the other sort of 20-odd movies that are causing the other half of that error rate are very similar. There are all these weird movies like I Heart Huckabees or, you know, Team America World Police or, you know, Sideways. These indie movies and I said, so why? And they said, well, the problem is with these movies, people either love them or they hate them. Like, you take a movie that's easy to predict, like Lord of the Rings, you know, it tends to get mostly the same rating. Or you take a movie that even people don't like, you know, but it's like a genre movie, like a chick flick, you know, a bad chick flick like The Black Book. It tends to get mostly bad reviews. Like, people agree on it. The problem with these movies is nobody agrees. It's all 5 stars and 1 stars. And when you have that sort of data signal, it's very confusing for the computer. It just cannot quite figure out how to recommend the movie.
But as you say, that, you know, that last half a percentage point to the 10% improvement that wins you the $1 million prize seems to be almost a vanishing point.
Yeah.
Because measuring taste with perfect accuracy is apparently an impossible dream, no matter how much data we have to work with. Films and books and music are art, and their appeal is, in some cases, ineffable, right?
Well, one way to look at the problem is that, like, what Netflix is asking the computers to do is look at all your past ratings and predict how you're going to like something in the future, right, that you haven't seen. But the problem is that, you know, our taste sort of changes over time. It's not static, or, you know, it often changes. And the way it changes is in these very unpredictable ways. Maybe you interact with someone who convinces you to look at a movie, or maybe you read something, or maybe you just get interested in something that you would never see otherwise because your friends are interested in it. And so it's very hard to capture those types of things algorithmically. And that's why a lot of people have said, well, maybe there's only so far you can push this idea that the computer can sort of put us on the couch and sort of, you know, psychologically figure what we're doing. Maybe you need to bring other live people in. Like, you need to have sort of a Facebook application that says, you know, here's what your friends are watching. You know, maybe you should take some cues from that. Maybe that's how you'd sort of solve the Napoleon Dynamite problem, because you use sort of the social mob in addition to the computer science angle.
We heard in the interview that just preceded ours how the recipe for accurate scientific research is transparency and crowdsourcing, at least joining together, pooling the information of a bunch of researchers working on the same problem. Now, Netflix has applied this lesson in structuring its Cinematch contest. Clearly, that's making a difference, right?
There seems to be a very sort of almost like civil or academic tone to what's going on, because as soon as someone discovers something, they'll sort of go onto the Netflix discussion boards for this and excitedly talk about it. They'll put computer code up on this board saying, hey, I just discovered this. So that has also sped things up, because all the innovators will see what everyone else is doing and they can all try it out. So it's been very, very sort of a very exciting thing to watch, you know, in a lot of ways.
So you've said the only way really to get to that 10% improvement or more is to bring real people back into the process. It's not likely, right, that Netflix or Amazon or any of these commercial websites will be doing that in a systematic basis. What are the stakes if they can't master the art of predicting our tastes better?
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, you could say that they actually have enjoyed great success. They've already taken a lot of the things that these guys have figured out. They've already folded them into their recommendation system. So they're already going to start making millions more. But the reason why this is important is because you've got this media world where you have way more stuff than anyone can ever pick from. This is what they call the paradox of choice. If you have too many choices, you'll sort of get frozen. You'll choose nothing. Music is an even bigger problem than films, because films, you know, a finite number come out every year, a couple hundred, a couple thousand. But, you know, that's as many songs as get issued on a day, right? So the music industry is to a certain extent, in even more of a lather to figure this one out, because, you know, their industry is in a complete free fall, and they're pretty convinced that the only way to cut through the noise is to be able to push people towards the right music. And so they have this very interesting heated argument about that falls along the same lines as to whether it should be done by computers or by humans, you know, because some people say, well, computers are the only way that you could look at these millions and millions of songs that are coming out every year and find patterns in them. Other people are like, no, that's not going to work. If you really want to get people addicted to things, you've got to have humans guiding them.
You quote in your piece someone who says, you know, there are cultural consequences to limiting yourself to computer data crunching to help guide people's opinions. It creates narrow-mindedness.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems is, and this is sort of an interesting philosophical point. Again, if you say that, okay, Clive Thompson, I'm going to recommend things based on what you've seen in the past, I'm getting sort of the Clive Thompson universe. But I like a lot of sci-fi, I like a lot of nerdy things, so I'm not going to go out and see the things that are mainstream, right? And maybe that's a problem, because I'm going to start being out of touch with what my friends are talking about, you know? Another way of putting it is that whether or not you like a piece of culture may not be the most compelling reason to see it. You know, maybe there are other reasons to encounter culture other than whether or not you'd like it. Maybe it's almost like, you know, eat your beans. You know, you should pay attention to some of this stuff if you want to know what's going on in society. And so how in God's name are you going to get a computer algorithm to say, I'm going to recommend something that I'm pretty sure you won't like, but I think you should see?
Only your friends can get you to eat your beans.
That's right.
Clive, thank you very much.
No problem. Good to be here.
Clive Thompson's article about Netflix and Cinematch is in this weekend's New York Times Magazine.
Hey, Napoleon, what'd you do all last summer again?
I told you, I spent it with my uncle in Alaska, hunting wolverines.
Did you shoot any?
Yes, like 50 of them. They kept trying to attack my cousins. What the heck would you do in a situation like that?
What kind of gun did you use?
A freaking 12-gauge, what do you think?
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Jamie York, Mike Volo, Mark Phillips, Nazanin Rafsanjani, and Michael Bernstein, and edited by Brooke. We had technical direction from Jennifer Munson and more engineering help from Zach Marsh. We also had help from Dina Pritchep and Andy Lancet. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer and John Keefe our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. You can listen to the program and find free transcripts at onthemedia.org. You can also post comments there or email us at onthemedia@wnyc.org. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.